This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Timps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're talking all about music as a factor in mental health, something we covered way back when with one of still my favourite guests, partly because he's a good friend of mine now, Fisky. My guest co-host, Jack Appley, is also pointing at himself. You are, of course, another favourite guest, and we did talk about music in a special COVID bonus episode. That is very true. Danielle is currently tied up with family and work stuff that's all got a bit double booked in this busy Christmas week. So my mate Jack is here to add his perspective as not only someone that gets to talk to me a lot about mental health in our day-to-day lives, has to listen to me dissect a lot of what's going on. You are also a classical choral conductor. So another perspective on this theme in addition to our guest. So to start off, are there any kind of top line thoughts you have about the relationship between music and mental health before we get on to stats?
I think there's an incredibly strong relationship between music and mental health, which not necessarily everybody might be aware of at first hand. I think there are multiple benefits to having music in one's life, which can help combat and improve one's mental health, because there are things, it sounds terribly grand, but there are many, many things with regards to music of all different types that we don't necessarily understand the effect that happens on the body and on the mind. And I think a medium like music, or any other art for that matter, that can sort of bridge the gap between words and thoughts and emotions and feelings and mental health is only a good thing. And I think more people should be open to it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you've got me thinking about how certainly when I was younger, I think music was a massive way that I processed emotions in a way that I didn't really realize at the time, but I sort of felt safe feeling things with music and with that kind of cause and effect of like, I play this song, it reminds me of this distinct emotion, I feel it, and then the song is over and I listen to a happier one or I move on with my day. And I think whilst I'm better at sort of living my emotions out loud more day to day now, I think that'll always be a part of how I process things. And there'll always be songs that can sum up particular ways I felt at times in my life in a way that, like, even me myself as a podcaster, I may not be able to articulate.
Yeah, no, I quite agree. And what I think you've reminded me of something there as well, which is I think one of the best compliments that I can pay anybody is that if there is a piece of music I listen to, it could be on the radio or it could be something I pass by and it reminds me of a specific person or of a specific time, I think that is just such a beautiful thing. I mean, I remember I recently did a piece on a recording which I did over the summer during lockdown, and every time we did it, every time we were rehearsing it, when it came to the recording, all I had was, because it was sung at the wedding of two of my best friends, all I could think of was them whenever I hear this piece of music, and it just fills me with nice, warm, happy feelings and warm memories of their day and our friendship. And that's the power that music can have. So yeah, very special.
Yeah, very true. And I've got some stats actually that I thought you might find interesting, because in 2018, a study from the Music Industry Research Association found that as much as 50% of musicians, so this is in the States, reported battling symptoms of depression, which is much higher than the general adult population. And nearly 12% reported having suicidal thoughts, so that's nearly four times that of the general population. And I found that interesting because it's an area of this link we've not really explored before, of how much people benefit from music, both as consumers, but also talking to basically every musician I've ever interviewed on the show, including today's guest, talks about the positives there of how it helps them kind of process things, how it helps sort of, I guess, be like a reassuring outlet in their life. And it's interesting then with that stat, how much is it that people move into this industry partly for that, for those benefits, and how much of it is sometimes the challenges of like pressures within the creative world can be a factor as well. And I think our guest today very much talks about both.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think there's this great dichotomy between the product which musicians produce for themselves, for their own mental well-being and their own pride in their work, and also for other people. But you compare that against the lifestyle. The lifestyle is an incredibly unstable lifestyle. I mean, the vast majority of musicians, I would argue, are self-employed, and that brings naturally an insecurity to their lifestyle, which and brings their stresses. For example, if they, and particularly this has been, I think we've spoken about this when I last came on the podcast, is that this has been exacerbated, particularly by COVID, and particularly like during lockdowns, previous lockdowns we've had. If you don't go to work, you don't get paid. Yes, the government has brought in things like self-employment grants and things like that to help people in the profession, but as a general rule, under normal circumstances, if you don't go to work, then you don't get paid. And if you don't get paid, you can't pay your rent and various other things. So there are many unseen stresses that go into that profession. And it's quite surprising, in one hand, that it's not spoken about as much, the problems and the stats that you just highlighted. But it doesn't surprise me that 50% of all musicians go through periods of depression, because it can be such a stressful, also quite isolating existence.
Yeah, and I think that's partly what I see as well. The trajectory of it is so difficult as well. So there's so much battling to work yourself up, particularly if we think of like people like previous guest Danny Wright. You know, the amount of work he's had to put in behind the scenes to get to a place where he's recognisable enough, to make it monetizable enough, to make it stable enough, to pay all the bills, you know? And so there's all that time. And, you know, whilst even those that come from a very musical background or have like all the right education for it, that still often lacks preparation in terms of like dealing with contracts, knowing how to do your tax return and doing all the kind of serious
nobody teaches
stuff.
You. Stuff nobody teaches you. I mean, I went to music college and they're beginning to talk about things like that, like how to develop your professional portfolio and what might go into that. Mm-hmm. But nobody taught me how to do a tax return. I mean, you know, this is incredibly important. I think as a result of that, I've now grown up with a fear of official forms. I hate official forms. I get very stressed about official forms, from everything from tax returns to doing the census. Everything just filled me with anxiety. But the thing is, all those stresses about the lifestyle, that's before you've even stepped foot on stage, if that's what your job as a musician is. You know, we're not talking about performance anxiety. This is just the day-to-day existence, the day-to-day management, the day-to-day ongoing of the business. For the individual, it's all on you. And there's a stress and there's a lot of pressure on that individual just to, before they even step foot on the stage.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And some good news then is I also looked into a lot of the benefits. And in particular, there was an article called How Listening to Music Can Have Psychological Benefits. And that's from Very Well Mind. So I will put a link to that in the episode description. It's quite a long article, but what I love is that it has a focus on all these different elements that are research-backed, but also the focus is via being a listener of music. We've talked a lot about being the person making the music, but even just being a consumer can have such benefits. And some of them that they list are reduce stress, reduce symptoms of common mental illnesses, reduce pain for those living with fibromyalgia, I found really interesting. Improved memory, I found slightly entertaining personally, because I think the only thing music improves my memory of is the music itself. Like, I've spent the last 2 days singing along to Christmas hits and being really surprised I remember all the lyrics from last year. So, yeah. but I'm sure it has a broader improvements for other people's memories. And in particular, I wanted to pick out a section where they say, whilst music can certainly have an impact on mood, the type of music is also important, with classical and meditation music offering the greatest mood-boosting benefits, whilst heavy metal and techno music are ineffective and can even be detrimental. And I didn't want to pull that out to like send for any metalheads, but I thought for you working in classical music, you'd like that.
Well, that's very reassuring. Reassuring that is, isn't it? I mean, yeah, that's quite something. I remember last year there was quite a lot of things in the news, and there was a lot of television coverage of the Dementia Choir. And this was absolutely amazing, where there was a colleague going into care homes where there were people with dementia, and there were people who couldn't really speak. They were very, very non-communicative, but played them some music or get them singing. You know, these are people who couldn't remember their own children's names, but they could remember songs from 50 years ago, because clearly the way that memory has been bound and bonded in their mind, it stayed, and it's somehow lasted. It's remained dormant all these years, but it only needed a gentle reminder for it to become a vivid memory, and these people were singing, and it's absolutely fabulous. It was really heartwarming, actually. I was crying, as you might expect. I was crying watching that television episode. But it just reminds me, because in the day-to-day business, you can get so easily bogged down, and as you say, as a person who does music for their profession, it's very easy to get bogged down in the mechanics of what goes into making things happen. But actually being reminded through something like that of the effect and the power that it has on people's lives is an incredibly heartwarming and reassuring thing, and special.
I agree. I think it's very special, having got to see you perform so many times.
You can take from that experience whatever you, the individual, want to take from it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can go to that concert and you can be moved by it. And same way that you go to a concert of mine and, you know, got no idea what your mate's doing at the front, waving his arms around in the air, but it sounds nice. And that's great. That is great.
But I tell you what I am enjoying, like I said, singing along to Christmas songs, and I'm getting very sort of like smitten with this whole like lovey time of year, which is unusual for me, but I'm going to lean into it because it's better I focus on that than I focus on COVID. So with that all said, some background on our guest. It's David Archuleta, who became a star at the age of 16 when competing on American Idol, the 7th season. And I've even got some stats, because this is incredible, is what he achieved on that show. More than 30 million television viewers fell in love with his distinct voice, and 44 million of them cast votes to make him the runner-up, and many people would say the fan favourite of that season 7. Since then, his single Crush debuted at number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100 charts and sold 166,000 downloads in its very first week. Since then, he's continued to put out incredible new music, including most recently an album and a single relating to his experiences with mental health. So really wonderful timing to get to chat to him. We'll talk loads more about his music in the episode, his experience of that fast track to fame, and also how, you know, your relationships with your family and the people that you work with are so key when navigating like a crazy new industry and all the pressures, like a lot of them that we've described. So with that all said, we'll get into that interview with David Archuleta in a moment. Is there anything else you wanted to say? Christmas week, any final thoughts? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, peeps. Get yourself off to a Christmas carol service if you can. But watch out, COVID's out there.
Yes, please be careful. I can't remember if I mentioned this earlier, but even just this week, two past guests of the podcast have both tested positive. So it's out there. It's affecting people you know. It's certainly affecting a lot of people I know. So yeah, stay safe. have a great Christmas. We'll still be here the following week. All right, that all said, into the episode with David Archuleta. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
I'm David Archuleta, and one of my earlier experiences with mental health and becoming familiar with what that was actually was from cartoons, I would say. There was a cartoon, I think it was on Cartoon Network. They would go back into the past, and they had gone to the past to meet Sigmund Freud. It really was fascinating to me because I wasn't familiar with Sigmund Freud and the subconscious and... or I don't remember how they went into it, but like the ego and the explaining how he would analyze people and the way they thought and how it affected their behavior, the unconscious part of our minds, the way that would also affect our behavior. And I guess that was a bit of my introduction to how a psychologist would look into their studies and research and how they would help other people. I wish I could remember what the cartoon was called.
I love that, though. That's not an answer I've had before, that a cartoon was your first introduction to mental health. I wonder if maybe that's the way we're going as these conversations open up more, that hopefully that'll be the answer for a lot more young people. We'll see. And so at that time, do you remember, was mental health something you were aware of at all in the abstract?
I think it really was something that my family could have benefited from, but it was... I think my family, both sides, my mom's side and dad's side, they just weren't, it wasn't something that was talked about. I think it was something that was a bit taboo. And so it was something that was usually, I only heard of, brought up when I was in school. And it was usually something that was kind of made fun of. So it was something that made me uncomfortable, to be honest, because usually people would talk about a therapist or having to see a psychologist or psychiatrist because you were mental, like you had a mental problem, and that was usually looked at as something bad. And that would cause someone to be bad as well. So it was something that I wasn't really open to. I usually thought like, oh, you know. So I think it was... wasn't really until that episode of that cartoon that I saw a therapist as something that was quite fascinating rather than like, I guess I saw in a negative light. So when I saw Sigmund Freud and how analytical it was and how scientific it was, and I think that's when I finally had a change of heart and a change of mind.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense, because so often the stigma can hold us back from all sorts. And it's not just getting help or speaking up when we need to, but it's also about understanding people. And if these conversations aren't had, it so easily drives a wedge between us and creates that kind of us and them mentality you're describing. And then the fear of, oh shit, what if I'm one of them?
Yeah.
And do you remember, as you got older, were there any moments you can think back on where you had that fear, where you thought, oh, there are parts of this I can relate to in terms of struggling with mental health, and what does that mean about me?
It really wasn't until my 20s that I became open to therapy, to the idea of meeting with a therapist. And I got started with my career with music on the show American Idol, the 7th season in 2008. And they had a therapist or psychologist that they had available as well on their staff to speak to. But I always felt a lot of distrust with the people around me. I felt like if I said anything, it would be that there wasn't anyone safe to speak to. So I just kind of like, oh, like there's a therapist there. But I think the first time I spoke to an actual therapist was when my dad was meeting with a therapist. He had been talking to someone from church, and the person at church recommended that he speak to someone, to a therapist. My dad and I have a bit of a difficult relationship. And so he thought that I needed to go meet with the therapist because I had a lot of issues. And when I met with his therapist, ironically, when I met with him and just gave my experience and my thoughts and the dynamic between the relationship between my dad and me. The therapist had suggested that I distance myself from my dad because he wasn't healthy. And I think that's kind of helped me have a look on, I always looked at my dad as someone who, he's a parent. So I grew up believing that, you know, anything your parents say, you have to respect and honor and accept and not really question or rebel against, because that would be dishonoring your parents. And growing up in, I guess, religious, where it's like one of, you know, the Ten Commandments, the fifth one being honor thy father and thy mother, I felt like in order to do that, I wasn't allowed to question things. But I also realized that there was some mental health challenges and perhaps personality disorders going on. And that was kind of the first time when I was like, huh, this therapist is saying something. But at the same time, my dad had kind of trained me to question anyone who questioned him. And so I wasn't really trusting in what this therapist was telling me, because he was telling me to question my dad, which my dad had said, if anyone does that, they're trying to pull our relationship apart and they're trying to pull you away. And it's, this is a crazy industry, the entertainment industry. So they will try to take advantage of you. They only care about your fame and whatever money they can get or whatever clout they can get from being around you. And I'm your dad. I raised you. I brought you into this world. So I have, no one has the same interests and pure intentions as I do as your parent and you as my child. And so I was pretty convinced of that. But when the dynamic had always been quite difficult between my dad and me, and this therapist had said this, and this was my first time speaking to him, and my dad had told me that I needed to speak to this therapist so that I could see the light and recognize my errors and faults in misjudging my dad's character, that it wasn't the best for me to be that close to him. Because I'd kind of distanced myself from my dad at that point, and he wanted me to see the therapist so that I could change my mind and realize how wrong I was to have not let my dad be as big of part of my life as he thought he should be. And I was 20 or 21 at this time. And so that was interesting to me. It's when I realized, oh, a professional is on my side, that I'm not completely insane with my choices and distancing myself, and that a professional says your dad's way of thinking is actually faulty and he's perhaps from his own traumas that he's dealing with currently and hasn't figured out yet, has taken too much charge of your life and is affecting you in a negative way, and you shouldn't be with your dad. And I thought that was strange. I'm like, how could you tell me not to be around my dad, because my dad is my dad? And isn't that betrayal towards my family? And I felt a lot of guilt whenever I felt like I was betraying my family, which was some of the language, the conversations that were had a lot of times was, if you do this, you're betraying your family. You're turning your back on them. And so I was very worried about betraying the most important foundation and base in my life, which was my family.
For sure. And that's so tough, because really your parents are kind of like the first truth you know. They're how you first learn to interpret the world via their experiences and their perceptions of it. And then for that to be something that you over time learn to distrust is already so difficult. And then that conflict of which way do you go with it? How much is it appropriate to let somebody in that, of course, we feel naturally that we should be able to let in entirely, and someone who is telling you, okay, you're in the music industry, this is crazy, there's going to be people out there with all sorts of perceptions of what should happen with your career, what sort of person you should be, and being catapulted into fame at such a young age and in such a quick way through American Idol, was that something that you also saw very much in your experiences?
Yeah, I really kept to myself. It's strange because sometimes I feel like I'm a very trusting person. When people are close to me, I'm very trusting. And anyone who isn't close to me, then I don't really trust any of them. And I think it's because if I let someone close to me, I put so much trust into them. And so when I was on American Idol, it was difficult because I had this whole team of on the American Idol, and it's a reality TV show, and it's a very big one, a very popular one. They know that whoever's going to be on their show is going to get this instant gain in attention from millions of people. And so I had this team of people who are suddenly a part of my life and suddenly telling me, we are your new family. And basically trying to teach me, saying, you can't trust anyone around you now. You can only trust us because we have kind of like the things my dad had been telling me. Like, we're your family. Like, count on us. We've been through this. This is our seventh year now. And people are going to take advantage of you. They had told us even like, you know, things like, you know, your own family will change. You'll see your family and friends change. And so don't even trust them. Don't give your number out. Don't share anything with these people, because your fame will change them and how they see you. But we are your family, so like, you can trust and count on us. Like, tell us if you need anything and whatnot. But then I also had my dad with me because I was a minor, so legally he had to be there. And we had just been coming out of a lot of family issues at the time. So it was just interesting timing to suddenly be on this TV show and have my dad with me basically 24/7 in this new environment. And then my dad was also saying, my dad questioned all of the people around him and their intentions as well. And him saying, like, you don't trust any of these people. So it was very confusing to have.
It sounds suffocating, yeah. Having all those conflicting opinions and not knowing who to trust in an environment that's already very new to you. And of course you're looking for people to guide you, and then not knowing who you can let do that.
Yeah, and especially when I got more into the competition and more of recognition, I had each side, I had the producers and the team of American Idol telling me, like, to question and not trust my dad. And then I had my dad telling me to question and not trust them. And so I felt like I was in a place where I couldn't really trust anyone. And at the same time, I was also being encouraged to not trust myself and my own judgment. I kind of was being conditioned to not trust myself either, because everyone around me knew more than I did, is what everyone was telling me. We know more than you. We have more experience. And so I felt like it just put me in a very confusing place.
Yeah.
And I'm not really sure what to make of it even still, but...
Yeah, it's so tough. And I think that kind of experience, and, you know, in many ways it parallels with a lot of, like, reality TV and people that I've interviewed over the years, where it is so overwhelming and your character is analysed to such an extent and commoditized in a way that can be, yeah, overwhelming. And perhaps then that experience with the therapist was so impactful because that was something so in contrast, where in a way it kind of really backfired on your dad, because he was thinking, okay, this person will convince him that I'm in the right and that he needs to stick with me over everyone else. And actually, instead, this person, it sounds like, led as a good therapist would, with your perspective and where you are in your best interest. And it sounds like that was really refreshing.
Yeah, it helped me realize the benefit in therapy when you are questioning yourself so much. The benefits of having someone who's not so close to you and so close and a part of your life, who can look at things objectively and validate your feelings I feel like that was something I was unfamiliar with. And that's when I realized this is very interesting. I would like to see, to look more into this. I was actually about to leave for a mission trip for my church for 2 years. I was going to South America and Chile. This whole experience had happened right before I left. And when I got back from Chile from those 2 years is when I started really looking more into psychology. I even took a class at a college, intro to psychology, to get the basics and a basic understanding of it more. And then shortly after that is when I started meeting with therapists, delving more into my own therapy.
And what was that kind of progression of both exploring mental health and psychology and what that meant in relation to your life, but then also having this music career to keep up and the kind of pressures and expectations that come with that?
Because the fame and the career happened so unexpectedly, American Idol, there are literally probably like 100,000 people who auditioned for my season. And just in the city that I was in, that there were 12 to 15,000 people there auditioning in a stadium with me. I didn't really look at the chances being high that I would stand out for any reason. It just went out of curiosity because I was a fan of the show and just wanted to see what it was like. And then to end up being in the final two, I wasn't expecting. I was 17 years old. I hadn't finished high school yet. I hadn't decided what I wanted to do with my life. And so the career happened before I was really ready to have made the decision that that was what I wanted to do. I was just already doing it. And I was like, well, I think always questioning, well, do I want to be doing this? But there was no time to pause and consider that question because I had to keep up with what everyone was wanting. You know, we want an album, we want a single, we want a tour, we want photo shoots, we want meet and greets. And so I just had to just move along with everything else. And it wasn't until I took a break, you know, when I became a missionary, that was after my career. And it was a 2-year pause and a lot of people were really upset with me. My team was upset with me. My dad, of course, was upset with me. He had been with my first manager that I was with. He was co-manager, so he had invested a lot of his life and his time, and he had left his career to dedicate his new career of being my manager. And so I had split ways with him and went with another manager, but when I was going on a mission, my dad felt, again, that I was betraying him and everything I had done, everything he had done for me and all the sacrifices that he had made to help me pursue a music career.
Which is such an interesting contrast in a way that he was somebody that, from what I understand, was a big part of your faith and that kind of direction in your life of how much your church meant to you. And yet he was the one saying, oh, no, not the mission, instead your music career.
Yeah. So within that time frame of my career starting and me going on a mission, my dad actually had discontinued going to church, and he started questioning and not really participating in our beliefs. I grew up in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which, okay, are Mormons, and he separated himself from the religion and the beliefs. And so I don't know if that had to do part of it. But it really went down to he felt like I was betraying my family and I was turning my back on them because I guess they looked at me as if I could continued and pursued my career, I would be helping my family through the financial challenges that they were facing and kind of giving them hope. I'm not sure, but that was difficult.
Yeah. Right. And it sounds like it was really challenging to your identity there because you've got these conflicting experiences of being David the musician, David the active member of his church and his religion, them both pulling for your time and being in some ways quite opposing viewpoints. And so whilst you're going through that, you're also seeking therapy, and you talked earlier about how that was affirming. And so was that something you were able to lean into again, finding how therapy could help establish who you were in the middle of all of this?
Yeah, I think a lot of what I initially needed to go through therapy for was because of the strange relationship I had with my dad. It was very public. While I was on American Idol, my dad and I had received a lot of attention because of my dad being there. And he got a lot of a bad rap for being known as the stage parent. But a lot of rumors that weren't true had been getting spread around on TMZ and on the news channels. And it was just pretty stressful because I just wanted to get through what I was going through, and the media was causing this, all of this attention to the relationship I had with my dad that I didn't really want to emphasize or focus on. But then I was having to defend my dad in all these interviews, and it was just, it was really difficult. I didn't want to speak ill of my dad. I knew I didn't have a good relationship with him, but I felt like if they had to keep bringing it up, and I had to keep defending him because he was my dad. And I knew the stress he was going through because he was going through a divorce with my mom. And I felt like probably a lot of the stress he was going through and the reason why he clung on to me, it's like I became his obsession. And I felt like it was a distraction from his family falling apart, and coming from a religious background and being in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, it's such an emphasis on family. And that's like the ultimate goal, like, you know, to follow Christ and to follow God. But the greatest joy you can have in this life and the greatest success is having a family, and having a family that's happy and together. And my dad wasn't having that happen. And so I think he was looking at it as, I don't want to acknowledge that my reality, I failed in keeping my family together. So he shifted his focus onto me and my career. And it was in a very unhealthy way, which is why I think it caused such an unhealthy dynamic between us.
And it sounds like he was making a lot of these experiences about him, and then in turn a lot of your career then becomes so influenced by that, and that's alongside all the other pressures of fame. And so if we move on to talking a little bit about where you're at with music more recently, in terms of how that's been a factor in opening up about your mental health more, exploring these kind of themes, and what the reaction to that has been.
When I started going through therapy, I think I had learned to disregard a lot of my feelings and disregard a lot of my emotions and my own thoughts, because I had always been taught to not trust my feelings, or my opinion wasn't as wise as the people around me. And so I was constantly in a state of questioning myself. And so therapy, I think, was really important to help me sit with my own feelings and acknowledge them and validate them and realize that they were real. And as I was going through therapy, I was actually working on an album. And so I ended up calling this album Therapy Sessions, because it was literally the music that came out of me while I was going through therapy, and just a lot of these negative feelings that I was just now facing and acknowledging, and really allowing to come out in front. So that was the most recent album that I did, and that was last year. And it was therapeutic to do.
Good, I'm glad to hear it. And so what was that like, sharing that side of yourself, the things, so many intimate experiences you've been going through in a therapy room, which is usually such a big component of that is confidentiality and privacy. So what was that like for you? And then what was also the fan reaction?
Perhaps I've just always felt obligated to share what I'm going through. So even if their therapy is like more private and more personable things. I just couldn't help but wonder. I don't know why. Maybe I overshare with things a lot of times, even in my shows. I'm known to talk a lot about personal things I'm going through. But I guess in a way it's therapeutic because I felt like I always had to hide things to present myself a certain way and to present myself as happy and content and excited about life in order to give this false impression and false example to other people. And I guess for myself, I felt like for my own kind of release and to be able to share things that I normally would have thought, I can't let anyone know about this. I can't show this vulnerable side of me because I have to be good and be happy for other people. And I feel like it's helped me be a lot happier and a lot more authentic and more myself, just to be real about what I'm going through in my own life.
That's so great to hear. And it sort of reminds me of something we started off talking about with that cartoon and the first time you saw the positives around exploring psychology and understanding ourselves. And I think that's something that really comes across in the music, that so much of your internal narrative, the sort of very well-expressed battles that can go on inside our heads, was something I really got from the music. And so have you found that people are really relating to you sharing what your kind of internal narrative is like and seeing the similarities there?
Yeah, I feel like music has become more of a vehicle or vessel to allow me to share my stories. So because I write the music, because I do the shows, it gives me a reason to share my thoughts and experiences with people, with which I feel is actually a lot more fulfilling than even, can be just as equal to or even more fulfilling than singing the songs themselves. And I feel like it was a way to kind of gain back my own power and self-control, because I think a part of me, not all of it, because I do love music and I love singing, but a part of me has always resented the career aspect of it because I felt like it was always my dad's. This was my dad's career. This is what he wanted for me. And so a part of me gets bitter about it because, like, I'm grateful, but also resentful because it's like, well, what would I have done if I did what I wanted to do? But by being able to share, you know, my struggles and the things I don't like about myself and just be real and talk about them, I feel like I get to be my own person rather than be whatever my dad wanted me to be. Even though that wasn't entirely a bad thing that he wanted me to be a singer, but I just wanted,
Yeah. And I think that's a nice note to wrap up on. It sounds like you've really managed to gain a lot of your autonomy back in being more honest. And I think that's an experience that a lot of people have, that when we explore who we really are, figure out more of our identity, that allows us to stick to that and therefore feel more free, because of course it is freeing to share who we really are versus feel a lot of the stigma that can exist around mental health, can exist around sexuality, religion, so many things that have been factors in your life. And by owning those, you get to be yourself rather than dodging all these different masks you might be expected to wear. And so if people want to hear your music, if people want to come see you at some shows, I know you've got a massive tour coming up next year. Could you share a bit about that?
Yeah, I'm doing a tour all across the U.S. starting next February. And that will go, when will it go till? I think it goes till March or April. But that'll be fun. It was a tour I was supposed to do on this Therapy Sessions album in 2020. But because of the pandemic, I had to push it back a couple years. But I'm looking forward to sharing those songs and being able to share the process of therapy and just maybe help encourage people who maybe could benefit from it to, by coming to the show, look to become more authentic and more honest with themselves and find healing in their lives as well.
Brilliant. I love that. And if our listeners wanted to listen to one track from the album, my favorite so far is Patient. Is there a favorite you have at this point?
I'm glad you enjoyed Patient. I actually wrote half of the album in the UK. So while Patient was in the US, my favorite song was written in London, and it's called Brave. And it's just a message that I felt like I really needed. It came out, I wrote it, but I think it was one I needed to hear for myself to believe in myself more and trust in myself more, because that's something I've always struggled with, is trusting in myself and believing my own feelings and believing my own opinions on things, to just courageously be myself and move forward, even no matter how anxious I'm feeling or no matter how depressed I might feel, because I've let a lot of my anxiety hold me back and prevent me from moving forward in my career and in my personal life as well. So that song serves as a personal mantra in ways.
Brilliant. I love that. And I love the album. So I hope loads of our listeners check out Therapy Sessions, and I'll include loads of links in the episode description as well. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been great.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.